The Book of Three by Lloyd Alexander, read by Jack Skoda, Randolph, Vermont, 2024. Chapters 5 and 6. Chapter 5, The Broken Sword. Gurgi ran off, yelping in terror. Gwydion was at Terran's side as the first rider bore down on them. With a quick gesture, Gwydion thrust a hand into his jacket and pulled out the net of grass. Suddenly, the withered wisps grew larger, longer, shimmering and crackling, nearly blinding Terran with streaks of liquid flame. The rider raised his sword. With a shout, Gwydion hurled the dazzling mesh into the warrior's face. Shrieking, the rider dropped his sword and grappled the air. He tumbled from his saddle while the mesh spread over his body and clung to him like an enormous spider web. Gwydion dragged the stupefied Terran to an ash tree and from his belt drew a hunting knife, which he thrust in Terran's hand. "This is the only weapon I can spare," he cried. "Use it as well as you can." His back to the tree, Gwydion faced the four remaining warriors. The great sword swung a glittering arc. The flashing blade sang above Gwydion's head. The attackers drove against them. One horse reared. For Terran, there was only a vision of hooves plunging at his face. The rider chopped viciously at Terran's head, swung around, and struck again. Blindly, Terran lashed out with the knife, shouting in rage and pain. The rider clutched his leg and wheeled his horse away. There was no sign of Gurgi, but a white streak sped across the field. Melengar now entered the fray. Her golden mane tossing, the white mare whinnied fearsomely and flung herself among the riders. Her mighty flanks dashed against them, crowding, pressing, while the steeds of the war party rolled their eyes in panic. One warrior jerked frantically at his reins to turn his mount away. The animal sank to its haunches. Melengar reared to her full height, her forelegs churning the air, and her sharp hooves slashed at the rider, who fell heavily to earth. Melengar spun around, trampling the cowering horsemen. The three mounted warriors forced their way past the frenzied mare. At the ash tree, Gwydion's blade rang and clashed among the leaves. His legs were as though planted in the earth. The shock of the galloping riders could not dislodge him. His eyes shone with a terrible light. "Hold your ground but a little while," he called to Terran. The sword whistled. One rider gave a choking cry. The other two did not press the attack, but hung back for a moment. Hoofbeats pounded over the meadow. Even as the attackers had begun to withdraw, two more riders galloped forward. They reined their horses sharply, dismounted without hesitation, and ran swiftly toward Gwydion. Their faces were pallid, their eyes like stones. Heavy bands of bronze circled their waist, and from these belts hung the black thongs of whips. Knobs of bronze studded their breastplates. They did not bear shields or helmets. Their mouths were frozen in the hideous grin of death. Gwydion's sword flashed up once more. "Fly!" he cried to Terran. "These are the Cauldron Born. Take Melengar and ride from here." Terran set himself more firmly against the ash tree and raised his knife. In another instant, the Cauldron Born were upon them. For Terran, the horror beating in him like black wings came not from the livid features of the Cauldron Warriors or their lightless eyes, but from their ghostly silence. The mute men swung their swords. Metal grated against metal. The relentless warrior struck and struck again. Gwydion's blade leaped past one opponent's guard and drove deep into his heart. The pale warrior made no outcry. No blood followed as Gwydion ripped the weapon free. The Cauldronborn shook himself once, without a grimace, and moved again to the attack. Gwydion stood as a wolf at bay, his green eyes glittering, his teeth bared. The swords of the Cauldronborn beat against his guard. Terran thrust at one of the livid warriors. A sword point ripped his arm and sent the small knife hurtling into the bracken. Blood streaked Gwydion's face, where an unlucky blow had slashed his cheekbone and forehead. Once his blade faltered, and a cauldron born thrust at his breast. Gwydion turned, taking the sword point in his side. The pale warrior doubled their assault. The great shaggy head bowed wearily as Gwydion stumbled forward. With a mighty cry, he lunged and then dropped to one knee. With his flagging strength, he fought to raise the blade again. The cauldronborn flung aside their weapons, seized him, threw him to the ground, and quickly bound him. Now the other two warriors approached. One grasped Taryn by the throat, and the other tied his hands behind him. Taryn was dragged to Melengar and thrown across her back, where he lay, side by side with Gwydion.
"Are you hurt badly?"
asked Gwydion, striving to raise his head.
"No," Taryn said, "but your own wound is grave."
"It is not the wound that pains me," said Gwydion, with a bitter smile. "I have taken worse and lived. Why did you not flee as I ordered? I knew I was powerless against the Cauldronborn, but I could have held the ground for you. Yet you fought well enough, Taryn of Caer Dalbyn."
"You are more than a war leader," Taryn whispered. "Why do you keep the truth from me? I remember the net of grass you wove before we crossed Avrin. But in your hands today, it was no grass I have ever seen."
"I am what I told you. The wisps of grass, yes, it is little more than that. Dalbyn himself taught me to use it."
"You too are an enchanter?"
"I have certain skills, alas. They are not great enough to defend myself against the powers of Arwan today," he added. "They were not enough to protect a brave companion."
One of the Cauldronborn spurred his horse alongside Melengar, snatched the whip from his belt. He lashed brutally at the captives.
"Say no more," Gwydion whispered. "You will only bring yourself pain. If we should not meet again, farewell."
The party rode long without a halt, fording the shallow river Ystrad. The Cauldronborn pressed tightly on either side of the captives. Taryn dared once again to speak to Gwydion, but the lash cut his words short. Taryn's throat was parched. Waves of dizziness threatened to drown him. He could not be sure how long they had ridden, for he lapsed often into feverish dreams. The sun was still high, and he was dimly aware of a hill with a tall, gray fortress looming at its crest. Melengar's hooves rang on stones as a courtyard opened before him. Rough hands pulled him from Melengar's back and drove him stumbling down an arching corridor. Gwydion was half-dragged, half-carried before him. Taryn tried to catch up with his companion, but the lash of the Cauldronborn beat him to his knees. A guard hauled him upright again and kicked him forward. At length, the captives were led into a spacious council chamber. Torches flickered from walls hung with scarlet tapestries. Outside, it had been full daylight. Here, in the great windowless hall, the chill and dampness of night rose from the cold flagstones like mist. At the far end of the hall, on a throne carved of black wood, sat a woman. Her long hair glittered silver in the torchlight. Her face was young and beautiful. Her pale skin seemed paler still above her crimson robe. Jeweled necklaces hung at her throat. Gem-studded bracelets circled her wrists, and heavy rings threw back the flickering torches. Gwydion's sword lay at her feet. The woman rose quickly.
"What a shame to my household this is," she cried at the warriors. "The wounds of these men are fresh and untended. Someone shall answer for this neglect."
She stopped in front of Taryn.
"And this lad can barely keep his feet."
She clapped her hands.
"Bring food and wine and medicine for their injuries."
She turned again to Taryn.
"Poor boy," she said with a pitying smile. "There has been grievous mischief done today."
She touched his wound with a soft, pale hand.
At the pressure of her fingers, a comforting warmth filled Taryn's aching body. Instead of pain, a delicious sensation of repose came over him, repose as he remembered it from days long forgotten in Caer Dalbyn, the warm bed of his childhood, drowsy summer afternoons. "How do you come here?" she asked quietly. "We crossed Great Avron," Taryn began. "You see what had happened?"
"Silence!" Gwydion's voice rang out. "She is Atren! She sets a trap for you!"
Taryn gasped. For an instant, he could not believe such beauty concealed the evil of which he had been warned. Had Gwydion mistaken her? Nevertheless, he shut his lips tightly. The woman, in surprise, turned to Gwydion. "This is not courtesy to accuse me thus. Your wound excuses your conduct. But there is no need for anger. Who are you? Why do you..."
Gwydion's eyes flashed. "You know me as well as I know you, Atren."
He spat the name through his bleeding lips. "I have heard Lord Gwydion was traveling in my realm. Beyond that..."
"Auron sent his warriors to slay us," cried Gwydion, "and here they stand in your council hall. Do you say that you know nothing more?"
"Auron sent warriors to find, not slay you," answered Atren, "or you would not be alive at this moment. Now that I see you face to face," she said, her eyes on Gwydion, "I am glad such a man is not bleeding out his life in a ditch. For there is much we have to discuss, and much that you can profit from."
"If you would treat with me," said Gwydion, "unbind me and return my sword."
"You make demands," Atren asked gently. "Perhaps you do not understand. I offer you something you cannot have, even if I loosen your hands and give you back your weapon. By that, Lord Gwydion, I mean your life."
"In exchange for what?"
"I had thought to bargain with another life," said Atren, glancing at Taryn. "But I see he is of no consequence, alive or dead." "No," she said, "there are other pleasanter ways to bargain. You do not know me as well as you think, Gwydion. There is no future for you beyond these gates. Here, I can promise..."
"Your promises reek of Anduin," cried Gwydion. "I scorn them. It is no secret what you are."
Artrin's face turned livid. Hissing, she struck at Gwydion, and her blood-red nails raked his cheek. Artrin unsheathed Gwydion's sword. Holding it in both hands, she drove the point towards his throat, stopping only a hair's breadth from it. Gwydion stood proudly, his eyes blazing. "No," cried Archwin, "I will not slay you. You shall come to wish I had, and beg the mercy of a sword. You scorn my promises. This promise will be well kept."
Archwin raised the sword above her head and smote it with all her force against a stone pillar. Sparks flashed, the blade rang unbroken. With a scream of rage, she dashed the weapon to the ground. The sword shone, still undamaged. Atren seized it again, gripping the sharp blade itself until her hands ran scarlet. Her eyes rolled back in her head. Her lips moved and twisted. A thunderclap filled the hall. A light burst like a crimson sun, and the broken weapon fell in pieces to the ground.
"So I shall break you,"
Atren shrieked. She raised her hand to the Cauldronborn and called out in a strange, harsh language. The pale warriors strode forward and dragged Taryn and Gwydion from the hall. In a dark passageway of stone, Taryn struggled with one of his captors, fighting to reach Gwydion's side. One of the Cauldronborn brought a whip handle down on Taryn's head. Chapter 6. Elanwë.
Taran came to his senses on a pile of dirty straw, which smelled as though Gurki and all his ancestors had slept on it. A few feet above him, pale yellow sunlight shone through a grating. The feeble beam ended abruptly on a wall of rough, damp stone. The shadows of bars lay across the tiny patch of light. Instead of brightening the cell, the wan rays made it appear only more grim and closed in. As Taran's eyes grew more accustomed to this yellow twilight, he made out a heavy, studded portal with a slot at the base. The cell itself was not over 3 paces square. His head ached. Since his hands were still bound behind him, he could do no more than guess at the large and throbbing lump. What had happened to Gwydion he dared not imagine. After the cauldron warrior had struck him, Taran had regained consciousness only a few moments before slipping once again into whirling darkness. In that brief time, he vaguely remembered opening his eyes and finding himself slung over a guard's back. His confused recollection included a dim corridor with doors on either side. Gwydion had called out to him once, or so Taran believed. He could not recall his friend's words. Perhaps even that had been part of the nightmare. He supposed Gwydion had been cast in another dungeon. Taran fervently hoped so. He could not shake off the memory of Artrin's livid face and horrible screaming, and he feared she might have ordered Gwydion slain. Still, there was good reason to hope his companion lived. Artrin could easily have cut his throat as he braved her in the council hall, yet she had held back. Thus, she intended to keep Gwydion alive. Perhaps, Taran thought wretchedly, Gwydion would be better off dead. The idea of the proud figure lying a broken corpse filled Taran with grief that quickly turned to rage. He staggered to his feet, lurched to the door, kicking it, battering himself against it with what little strength remained to him. In despair, he sank to the damp ground, his head pressed against the unyielding oaken planks. He rose again, after a few moments, and kicked at the walls. If Gwydion were, by chance, in an adjoining cell, Taran hoped he would hear this signal. But he judged from the dull and muffled sound that the walls were too thick for his feeble tapping to penetrate. As he turned away, a flashing object fell through the grating and dropped to the stone floor. Taran stooped. It was a ball of what seemed to be gold. Perplexed, he looked upward. From the grating, a pair of intense blue eyes looked back at him.
"Please," said a girl's voice, light and musical. "My name is Elonwy, and if you don't mind, would you throw my bauble to me? I don't want you to think I'm a baby playing with a silly bauble, because I'm not. But sometimes there's absolutely nothing else to do around here, and it slipped out of my hands when I was tossing it."
"Little girl," Taran interrupted, "I don't..."
"But I am not a little girl," Elonwy protested. "Haven't I just been and finished telling you? Are you slow-witted? I'm so sorry for you. It's terrible to be dull and stupid. What's your name?" she went on. "It makes me feel funny not knowing someone's name. Wrong-footed, you know. Or as if I had 3 thumbs in 1 hand. If you see what I mean, it's clumsy."
"I am Taran of Caradalban," Taran said, then wished he had not. This, he realized, could be another trap.
"That's lovely," Elonwy said gaily. "I'm very glad to meet you. I suppose you're a lord, or a warrior, or a warlier, or a bard, or a monster, though we haven't had any monsters for a long time."
"I am none of those," said Taran, feeling quite flattered that Elonwy should have taken him for any one of them.
"What else is there?"
"I am an assistant pig keeper," Taran said. He bit his lip as soon as the words were out. Then, too, excuse his loose tongue, told himself it could do no harm for the girl to know that much.
"How fascinating," Lanwy said. "You're the first we've ever had, unless that poor fellow in the other dungeon is one, too."
"Tell me of him," Taran said quickly.
"Is he alive?" "Oh, I don't know," said Elonwy. "I peeked through the grating, but I couldn't tell. He doesn't move at all, but I could imagine he is still alive. Otherwise, Artrin would have fed him to the ravens. Now, please, if you don't mind,
It's right at your feet. I can't pick up your bauble, Terran said, because my hands are tied. The blue eyes looked surprised. Oh, well, that would account for it. Then I suppose I shall have to come in and get it. You can't come in and get it, said Terran wearily. Don't you see I'm locked up here? Oh, of course I do, said Alanwi. What would be the point of having someone in a dungeon if they weren't locked up? Really, Terran of Caer Dalbyn, you surprise me with some of your remarks. I don't mean to hurt your feelings by asking, but is assistant peacekeeper the kind of work that calls for a great deal of intelligence? Something beyond the grating and out of Terran's vision swooped down, and the blue eyes disappeared. Suddenly, Terran heard what he took to be a scuffle, then a high-pitched little shriek, followed by a larger shriek, and a moment or two of loud smacking. The blue eyes did not reappear. Terran flung himself back on the straw. After a time, in the dreadful silence and loneliness of the tiny cell, he began to suddenly wish Alanwi would come back. She was the most confusing person he had ever met, and truly as wicked as everyone else in the castle, although he could not quite bring himself to believe it completely. Nevertheless, he longed for the sound of another voice, even Alanwi's prattling. The grating above his head darkened. Night poured into the cell in a black, chilly wave. The slot in the heavy portal rattled open. Terran heard something being slid into the cell and crawled toward it. It was a shallow bowl. He sniffed carefully and finally ventured to touch his tongue to it, fearing all the while it might be poisoned food. It was not food at all, only a little water, warm and musty. His throat was so parched that Terran disregarded the taste, thrust his face into the bowl, and drank it dry. He curled up and tried to sleep away his pain. The tight thongs pinched, but his swollen hands were mercifully numb. Sleep brought only nightmares, and he roused to find himself shouting aloud. He settled down once more. Now there was a rasping sound under the straw. Terran stumbled to his feet. The rasping grew louder.
Move away,
cried a faint voice. Terran looked around him, dumbfounded.
Get off the stone.
He stepped backward. The voice was coming from the straw.
Well, I can't lift it with you standing on it, you silly assistant pigkeeper,
the muffled voice complained. Frightened and puzzled, Terran jumped to the wall. The pallet began rising upward. A loose flagstone was lifted, pushed aside, and a slender shadow emerged as if from the ground itself. Who are you? Terran shouted.
Who did you expect?
Said the voice of Alanwi.
And please, don't make such a racket. I told you I was coming back. Oh, there's my bauble.
The shadow bent and picked up the luminous ball.
Where are you? Cried Terran. I see nothing. Is that what's bothering you? Alanwi asked. Why didn't you say so in the first place?
Instantly, a bright light filled the cell. It came from the golden sphere in the girl's hand. Terran blinked with amazement.
What's that? He cried. It's my bauble, said Alanwi. How many times do I have to tell you?
But it lights up.
What did you think it would do? Turn into a bird and fly away?
Alanwi, as the bewildered Terran saw her for the first time, had, in addition to blue eyes, long hair of reddish gold reaching her waist. Her face, though smudged, was delicate, elfin, with high cheekbones. Short white robe, mud-stained, was girdled with silver links. A crescent moon of silver hung from a fine chain around her neck. She was 1 or 2 years younger than he, but fully as tall. Alanwi put the glowing sphere on the floor, went quickly to Terran, and unknotted the thongs that bound him.
I meant to come back sooner, Alanwi said, but Artrin caught me talking to you. She started to give me a whipping. I bit her.
Then she locked me up in one of the chambers, deep underground, Alanwi went on, pointing to the flagstones. There are hundreds of them under Spyro Castle, and all kinds of galleries and little passages, like a honeycomb. Artrin didn't build them. This castle, they say, once belonged to a great king.
She thinks she knows all the passageways, but she doesn't. She hasn't been in half of them. Can you imagine Artrin going through a tunnel? She's older than she looks, you know. Alanwe giggled. But I know everyone, and most of them connect with each other. It took me longer in the dark, though, because I didn't have my bauble. You mean you live in this terrible place? Terran asked. Naturally, Alanwe said. You don't imagine I'd want to visit here, do you? Is Artrin your mother? Terran gasped and drew back fearfully. Certainly not, cried the girl. I am Alanwe, daughter of Angahard. Daughter of Ragat. Daughter of... Oh, it's such a bothering going through all that. My ancestors, she said proudly, are the Sea People. I'm of the blood of Lyr, half-speech, the Sea King. Artrin is my aunt, although sometimes I don't think she's really my aunt at all. Then what are you doing here? I said I live here, Alanwe answered. It must take an awful lot of explaining before you understand anything. My parents died and my kinsmen sent me here so Artrin could teach me to be an enchantress. It's a family tradition, don't you see? The boys are the war leaders and the girls are the enchantresses. Artrin is in league with Aran of Anvoim, cried Terran. She is an evil, loathsome creature. Oh, everybody knows that, said Alanwe. Sometimes I wish my kinsmen had sent me to somewhere else, but I think they must have forgotten about me by now. She noticed the deep slash on his arm. Where did you get that? She asked. I don't think you know much about fighting if you let yourself get knocked out, about, and cut up so badly. But I don't imagine assistant peacekeepers are often called on to do that sort of thing. The girl tore a strip from her hem of her robe and began binding Terran's wound. I didn't let myself be cut up, Terran said angrily. That's Aran's doing, or your aunt's. I don't know which. And I don't care. One is no better than the other. I hate Atrin, Alanwe burst out. She is a mean, spiteful person. Of all the people who come here, you're the only one who's the least bit agreeable to talk to. And she has had you damaged. That's not the end of it, Terran said. She means to kill my friend. If she does that, said Alanwe, I'm sure she'll include you. Artrin doesn't do things by halves. It would be a shame if you were killed. I should be very sorry. I know I wouldn't like it to happen to me. Alanwe, listen, Terran interrupted. If there are tunnels and passages under the castle, can you get to the other cells? Is there a way outside? Of course there is, Alanwe said. If there is a way in, there has to be a way out, doesn't there? Will you help us? Terran asked. It is important for us to be free of this place. Will you show us the passage?
Let you escape? Alanwe giggled. Wouldn't Artrin be furious at that? She tossed her head. It would serve her right for whipping me and trying to lock me up. Yes, yes.
She went on, her eyes dancing.
That's a wonderful idea. I would love to see her face when she comes down to find you. Yes, it would be more fun than anything I could think of. Can you imagine?
Listen carefully, Terran said. Is there a way you can take me to my companion? Alanwe shook her head.
That would be very hard to do. You see, some of the galleries connect with the ones leading to the cells, but when you try to go across, what happens is you can start to run into passages that...
Never mind then, Terran said. Can I join him in one of the passageways?
I don't see why you would want to do that, said the girl. It would be so much simpler if I could just go and let him out and have him wait for you beyond the castle. I don't understand why you would want to complicate things. It's bad enough for two people crawling around, but with three, you can imagine what that would be. And you can't possibly find your way by yourself.
Very well, Terran said impatiently. Free my companion first. I only hope he is well enough to move. If he isn't, then you must come and tell me right away, and I'll think of some means of carrying him. And there is the white horse Melengar, Terran went on. I don't know what's been done with her.
She would be in the stable, Alanwe said. Isn't that where you'd usually find a horse?
Please, Terran said. You must get her too, and weapons for us. Will you do that? Alanwe nodded quickly.
Yes, that should be very exciting, she giggled again.
She picked up the glowing ball,
cupped it in her hand, and once again the cell was dark, the stone grated shut, and only Elanui's silvery laughter lingered behind. Taran paced back and forth for the first time, he felt some hope, though he wondered how much he could count on this scatterbrained girl. She was likely to forget what she started out to do. Worse, she might betray him to Atrin. It might be another trap, a new torment that promised him freedom only to snatch it away. But even so, Taran decided they could be no worse off. To save his energy, he lay down on the straw and tried to relax. His bandaged arm no longer pained him, and while he was still hungry and thirsty, the water he had drunk had taken some of the edge from his discomfort. He had no idea how long it would take to travel through the underground galleries, but as time passed, he grew more anxious. He worked at the flagstone the girl had used. It would not move, though Terran's efforts bloodied his fingers. He sank again into dark, endless waiting. Elanui did not return.